Welcome to the Bangers List podcast, a podcast where we talk about a new song every week from our ever-growing playlist of metal. I'm using finger quote things here because it's, you know, not really metal, but we think it's metal. It's kind of metal, you know. We're sharing songs with each other.
And heavy music.
Yeah, and the listeners. And again, this week we've moved into a very famous band. We're still very excited to talk about it. It's the Amity Affliction.
Well, it is a new song.
It is a new song by them, but it's not really a new song
it's,
by
it's
a
not a band that's new band. To us, which was... sort of the idea.
Yeah, but sort still, of not. Here we are. The song's called All My Friends Are Dead. We'll just jump into a sample right now. All right. Do you guys like this one?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So straight from the get-go, you can see it is a banger. It bangs hard. It's just fast and in your face straight away, which is pretty good. Then it tones it back in the choruses and stuff. But before we get into anything too exciting, does it seem extra fast because of the blast beats on the drums, which is the snare on every other beat, basically? When usually like people use snares on, you know, your second and your fourth beats more often than not.
Yes, this is the first time in their career they've used blast beats as well. I can't think of a single song they've done, and I know pretty much all of them where they've had blast beats. So it's a big thing for them as well, I guess. Probably influences of other bands. I don't know. Like, this one's sort of come out of left field as well, because their last record, Misery, was a lot more chilled out. It was a different direction from that kind of melodic hardcore sort of direction that most of their records had taken. So this one sort of came out of the gate and surprised everybody, which is really good because there's a lot of people. Fuck, it's such a contentious issue, isn't it? I don't even want to. There's so much to cover on this one. Yeah, I think it's definitely big for them. It's a really big sound, like you say. They got that really big sort of bottom end presence in their recording. So,
no, I think it's a fantastic song. Probably one of the best they've released for several years now. And like Julian mentioned, their most recent album, Misery, which was last year, was it correct?
Misery was 2018. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Was a lot more was a different direction for them. They were very open about that, and I personally think still had some really good songs on there, but just not everyone's cup of tea. And maybe this new track is a hint as to what's to come. Who knows?
What's coming up?
Or,
yeah.
Or it could just be a one off. You know, maybe they're just like, we've got this tune, we want everyone to hear it. So,
yeah, it's so obviously their sound has changed over the past, you know, decade or so.
Yeah.
But this song kind of sounds like a culmination of all the styles they've touched on, because it is extremely fast, heavy, angry, and the chorus pulls way back and it's almost calm.
Is that sort of more like that chorus style is a lot more on the lines of Misery?
Yeah.
I mean, just Aaron Stringer's clean vocals in that respect. Like, I've always loved them. You know, like, that dude gets a lot of hate. A lot of people are like, oh, he's fucking auto-tuned. And they've always been really adamant. They're like, he's not auto-tuned. I don't think he's auto-tuned. They just, like, everyone sort of, not everyone, a lot of people criticize him live. I'm like, dude, they do so many fucking live shows. You know, it's like we talked about before. But, like, it's the amount of lyrics, it's the really sort of slow and tapered kind of feel to it that makes it feel like their newer stuff. Whereas sort of some of the older chorus, he was singing a lot more lyrically.
Yep.
And a lot more sort of aggressively in that clean style, if that makes sense.
He's moved away from singing like whole long verses in a chorus to this song in particular. Is just like,
yeah.
He's well, like the woes and the...
And I think that it's something that they do well. It's the simplicity of it. It's dying slowly is dying lonely. That's the chorus.
Yeah.
And I think that's good because it's quite succinct and it's quite poignant. You know, they're not trying to make a big deal out of anything. It's just this is the chorus and it thematically fits really well with the song.
And it gives Joel, who is the unclean vocalist, it gives him a lot more to do in this song, because I think in the Misery album and some of their live sets from that album, he didn't have as much to say or to sing in those songs, because a lot of it was Aaron singing.
Yeah. Well, he was doing a lot of tonal screaming.
Yeah.
And he was actually doing some cleans too.
Yeah, that's right. He's doing some experimenting with some cleans, and he, I think they sort of reversed roles a little bit, where quite a lot of the songs, Joel would come in and take the vocals for the chorus, whereas Aaron would do most of the verses. So it was a bit of a different kind of structure, layout to the way they approached their song. Structurally, it was a little bit different.
This song was structurally different.
But this is kind of like, in a way, this is a bit more traditional. I think it's why it's sort of, from what I've heard, people tend to be loving it. From the people the fans I've spoken to, people are loving it because it reminds them of that old school Amity. But it's still, I like it because it's still different.
We're all so nostalgic.
Yeah. Well, I guess just for everyone listening, Joel and I particularly, I've been a fan of these guys since their first record, Severed Ties, in 2008. That was definitely more of a post-hardcore kind of album. And then they did Young Bloods, which is in 2010, which is arguably one of the best Australian heavy records, I think, ever. I don't know all of them. I'm not qualified to say it is or it is not the best, but there's not a single person that I know that's listened to that record that hasn't said that's a fucking 10.
Yeah, so a bit of Aussie pride there.
Yeah,
and also, definitely. That album has a great subject matter. The whole point of that album for me was Don't Kill Yourself is the Thing, and dealing with, it's a subject matter we always talk about, you know, dealing with depression, sadness, anxiety, anger, and all the emotions that make your life tumultuous, right?
That's right.
So it was a great subject matter for that album. And that's 9 years ago now. And they've evolved since then. And this year you can see.
Well, they've done, three more since then. They did Chasing Ghosts, Let the Ocean Take Me, and then This Could Be Heartbreak. And then last year they did Misery. Yeah. So just sort of wrap that to the history up. And they're a band that I even mentioned them on the Parkway episode. We'll touch on this later, but you know they get shit from people because they've had a similar sound over the course of their evolution, and then Parkway had a completely different sound. So people just love to hate the popular bands, I think.
Yeah. And it's like they have that same kind of sound for 3 or 4 albums, and then as soon as they start to kind of diverge from that slightly,
so people just start, fucking people hate just, them. Yeah. I mean, like, look, I love these guys. I fucking love these guys, but. Like, well, not, but I didn't like Misery as much. I still rated it, you know, but it was like we talked about with Parkway. It's a band you like does something different, and they just went, we're going to do something really different. I went, okay, like, there's still a few songs on there that I reckon are pretty fucking good, but, you know, I without sounding cliche, I think I like this more. This is a really big thing for them as a fan. Do you know what I mean? I really rate it. So good on them for doing something just fucking balls to the wall.
But you also always hear usually vocal minorities complaining about things. Like, I'm sure large sections of the fan base would have enjoyed all their albums.
100%. And they would have got a lot more attention with Misery because, like with Reverence, it was a lot more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a lot more mainstream exposure for it. You know, like they got a lot more main arena exposure for it. So, you know, it's stuff's a lot more accessible. The lead single, Ivy, was very sort of chilled out, and then had that heavy bit in it, and then sort of, you know, a lot of people that couldn't listen to something like Young Bloods or All My Friends Are Dead as a go-to could listen to that easily.
Yeah.
Same fucking shit we talk about. Like, people want to call bands sellouts. They're just doing what they want to do, man. And at the end of the day, it's a fucking business. Like, we talked about this with Parkway.
Yeah, this industry is killer, as it were.
I got to say, you're showing your age when you're looking at comments on Instagram, right? Because I think their lead singer put up a post about this song. And the comments were just full of people going, oh, you ripped off Knock Loose. Now, for the, like, Knock Loose are an American hardcore band, like beatdowny hardcore. They're fucking not bad. They just put out their second record, and one of the songs has a line in it that's All My Friends Are Dead, right? So it's not so much me showing my age, but everyone in the comment section, and you shouldn't look at comment section because they're just cancer. Everyone's like, oh, you guys ripped off Knock Loose. And even Joel Birch was like, you guys ever heard of Turbo Negro? They're a band from Sweden. They did a song called All My Friends Are Dead. It was on Viva La Bam about 15 years ago. Really popular song. No one wants to mention it. You know what I mean? So you can sort of tell the demographic that are at least observing stuff in the social media world, I guess. Do you know what I mean?
So what you're saying is the best people in the world hang out in comment sections on Facebook and Instagram.
100%, without a fucking doubt.
You've got to get up to scratch on your argument skills in those areas.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not, like, you can't say, like, yeah, I'm happy to defend Amity. You can't just go, oh, you ripped off this band. It's like, these guys have been around for fucking like 10 years before this other band. And it's the same line. It's a fucking children's book as well. There's a book about dinosaurs called All My Friends Are Dead. It's everywhere. That's that title and everything is everywhere.
I remember that one.
Yeah. It's about a dinosaur. Yeah.
So that, perfect. Because this puts you back to the point that music in reality is a personal preference.
Yeah.
And you can enjoy what you want to enjoy. And if people want to talk shit to you about it, well, fuck, they're not worth your time, are they? Or your opinions in reality.
Not really, no. I just see little things that frustrate me. You know? Like, again, it's that attitude of, oh, you're not doing the same thing, or, oh, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, because they had a great formula. Most of their songs and their albums were a very similar formula.
Yep.
And I think people complained about that, like, oh, they do the same thing. So it was, it's always, no matter what you do, there's going to be people that will go against it. And I think this song is great. It shows all their skills, except maybe Aaron's a little bit because he's a great singer and could do more. But anyway, it's still, yeah.
Even saying that, though, like, he does well with what little he's given in this song. And he uses the time he has in this song wisely, I think, and it and demonstrates his skills pretty well. Like, yeah, he might not have a lot lyrically to work with, but the notes he is required to hit, he hits bloody well.
So, yeah, he's a pretty good singer.
And you can tell that, like, he's, when he was younger, he used to do, like, the Seven Ties record. He had a lot of these really high highs. And, like, it's just a fact. You do those when you're, like, 20 or 18 or whatever. You get older, your vocal cords evolve, you know, and your voice gets lower. It's going to be fucking a lot harder to do those.
Oh, so, yeah.
But he's always had that really nice higher end as well that he can do. But, you know, some of the stuff, the Seven Ties, is just, if you physically can't do that, you can't do that. But you still sound good doing your version of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because...
Just touch... Oh, you go.
No.
Well, I just want to touch on the lyrics because, you know, we'll talk about the actual song. What do you guys make of the lyrics?
Well...
Oh, all his friends are dead. So deep.
I've always had a bit of trouble with Joel's lyrics because obviously he's quite open about his personal mental health struggles. And I think, I'm assuming Joel was to our knowledge, Joel wrote these lyrics too. And he talks about his battles with depression and related mental health issues
and
quite often.
And also, I think he, substance abuse is another one he'll talk about and touch on.
Yeah, yeah, there was a bit of that on.
And I think this, my take on this song is the, you know, Joel or whoever's point of view, this is from. It's kind of about that struggle with the depression and the fact that you're so consumed by it, so, you know, so far down that hole that you've got no friends. You feel like you've got no friends left. It feels like all your friends are dead, like you've got no one left to reach out to and talk to about it, and you're kind of just stuck living this lonely life by yourself, and hence the chorus.
I was thinking about it completely differently. So that's, okay. I think that's better than what I thought.
Yeah, do what you think.
Yeah, like I've loved his lyrics for pretty much since they started. I'm, like I said, a huge fan. So there has been a natural evolution, but there is usually a common theme, and that is, you know, he writes about his issues with depression and anxiety. That's fine. I was thinking because, you know, these guys, they're not getting on, but, you know, I think he's the oldest in the band and he's like 37, 38 maybe.
Is he really?
I know he's over 35.
He looks so young.
Yeah, exactly right. And that, like, age is like, you're old, you can't do this anymore. Like, you can be a rock star till you're 90, but yeah, you know, it could be him sort, like, of approaching that 40-year-old mark and going, you know, like, fuck, this is my social circles have changed, or just the way I see life in regards to the people around me has changed. But I think Daniel's a little more closer to it. You know what I mean? Because you're in that fucking hole.
It'd be good to ask him, because in the past he has talked about what the songs he has written, what they are about.
He's done a couple of I know he did an interview where he went through every track on Chasing Ghosts. One thing that shits me about when Amity put new music out is other people, because the people constantly give this guy shit for writing about the same topic, which is depression and anxiety. But I mean, for fuck's sake, if you suffer with that really badly, like, that's going to be your best material. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, you got famous, you became a rock star and you had money, or you did whatever you did and your depression just magically goes away. You know what I mean? It's like this person is dealing with this shit on a daily basis and it gets worse and it gets better. And you just give, like, people give them shit for that. And that frustrates me, because I'm like, yes, I understand that. If you don't like it, listen to something else.
But if you are dealing with something day to day, chances are it's going to be something you'll write about because of all the experience you have dealing with it, right?
Yeah.
So...
Just a little pet peeve of mine there. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's kind of therapeutic as well, isn't it? Like, have you guys ever tampered with lyrics before? Like, just for the sake of it? Yeah. And it's, in a way, it's like writing down your thoughts on paper, right? And it gives you a bit of clarity, doesn't it? Like, cause you don't know, sometimes you can't comprehend when you're going through a shit time. Like, you can't comprehend everything that's going on in your head.
Yeah.
And you bring it to paper. And just writing it down, you're kind of like, oh, okay, I didn't realize I felt that way.
Yeah.
And it gives you a chance to reflect. Yeah. And yeah. So, and I'm, you know, this, I think that's, it, this, that's something that really works for a lot of songwriters. And in this case, Joel, I think, is, you know, no exception to that. I think, he writes about his personal experiences really well.
Yeah. I've only written probably lyrics for like two songs for the band I used to be in many moons ago, but we actually had the music for them first. and then I wrote the lyrics for them. So I sort of was, as I was writing them, I was making the rhyming patterns and all the syllables sort of work through nicely. So when you get to the end of that and you've written all your lyrics down, you got your verses and your chorus sorted, it is quite satisfying to look back and go, yes, that's something I've created, rather than like I tried a couple of times, I couldn't write lyrics without a song for them. Because, okay. You know, like, I don't know where, like, you know, you need this to go in a verse. How long is the verse? Is it 16 bars?
Yeah.
Is it 32 bars? Is it something in between? Is it 5/4?
Yeah.
Is it heavy? Is it soft? Does it need screamed vocals, clean vocals, everything? So I think, I don't know. Some people can probably just write them. They can just write stuff down.
I think everyone's a little bit different in that sense. And I've looked into songwriting processes for various bands. And, you know, you look at like the YouTube behind the scenes, you know, the making of this album, making of that album.
Are you talking about St. Anger?
No.
I thought you might have been referencing that little bit though, where they were writing lyrics and Kirk Hammett said something and everyone else just shit on him. Fuck you. And I think what he wrote actually ended up being in like one of the songs. They were just like, that's fucked. And then later on they're like, oh, that's actually not bad.
Shit. But no, not talking about St. Anger, but it's interesting looking at the way different artists approach their songwriting, and they've all got different methods. And as long as you got that end product and it works at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, I don't think.
Yeah.
But me personally, I'd be on the same idea as I'd be on the same wavelength as you with the fact that I'd rather have a structure down so I know what I'm working with.
Yeah.
And then for me, like if, you know, as a guitarist, I'd probably come up with a tune first. I'd come up with a riff or a tune or a chord progression that I really like, and I wanted to try and get something going from that, and then melodies start to stem from that, and then the lyrics can stem from the melodies, and you know, you get the mood going for the song and the lyrics can kind of be inspired from that mood and make you think about certain things. But then I don't know, there are probably other people that can just, you know, just be walking along the street and come up with
it might be the case that once you're comfortable as a lyrics writer, you can just write and go, yeah, I'll be able to tune this up later.
Mm.
Or I'll have like this verse from this song I wrote, I'll take that and put it over here and mix stuff around, I think. So probably the way I was doing it was a bit more like, not like amateur, novice, I guess.
Well, like you said, it's your artists, right? And every artist is going to approach their work differently. So it's just the nature of yourself. And just, if you keep writing, you just get better at writing, right? And then however it works, it'll work for you.
Yeah.
Basically.
So I wanted to sort of touch back on the music for this one. They actually recently, in the last year or two, they've actually changed their drummer. So for the majority of their career, it was Joel and Aaron, the singer, the screamer, and the bass player / clean vocalist, and Ryan Burt, the drummer, who actually left the band about a year or two back. We're not really sure why. Not really, not much point wondering, but there was, doesn't seem to be bad blood between them, I guess, but he sort of left for personal reasons, like dealing with mental health. So they brought on this new guy. They actually had Troy Wright, who's a famous YouTuber, who's to give you an idea about him, he does tutorials for stuff like Bleed by Meshuggah, and he'll do playthroughs of it. They're just fucking immaculate. So
he's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's insane.
Yeah.
Not that what Ryan Burt, well, Ryan Burt's a fucking great drummer, but anyway, they got this guy and then they've now got a guy called Joe Longabardi. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I think it's Longabardi. And I think the point I'm getting at is I think him coming on board has just sort of changed the flavor, because he did the drums for Misery, which were solid as a rock, but still quite simple by comparison to what his predecessor had done. So him just rolling in and then pumping out something like this, because there's a couple of sections in the middle and then towards the end where he's got that sort of measured pace on the double bass, you know, right, left, right, left, right, left, and he goes sort of double time on it, which you don't really hear in hardcore bands. Like, not a lot of drummers even showcase that. So that's more like a deathcore thing.
Where it just doubles the speed bass.
So, yeah, it's like da-da-da-da-da-da like that for a short burst.
Yes, I get what you're talking about.
Yeah. So that spun me out. And I was like, fucking what? Blast beats and that, like, holy shit. Yeah,
well, the fact that it just starts with a blast beat, I mean, that gets your hook straight away. Hey, catches you off guard a little bit at first.
Like, massively
First holy listen, shit, it's like, oh, my God, like, you know, Joel just comes in with the, all my friends are dead, and then drums straight away, straight fucking into it. And
Yeah,
and then, and like, I love how, and I love the transition into the chorus. I know we've sort of touched on this already, but the transition of the chorus is like, we talk about this quite a lot, songs having different gears or different levels throughout. And normally you kind of, you'll build up the intensity and kind of reach this kind of pinnacle in the choruses. But I feel like it sort of takes a step back, or not even a step back, but a sort of step sideways.
Shifts gears.
Yeah, shifts gears, and it gives you a different sort of feel, and it goes into like a halftime in the chorus,
yeah,
right? And it's sort of, yeah, just an awesome transition from that, just that, you know, blast beat, you know, foot to the floor kind of stuff at the start. And then as a verse kind of progress, just still really high energy, but drops off a little bit and then into the
It is a classic chorus. Contrasting that is, like, you know, pretty common in this genre.
Yeah.
But it's even more so because of how, like, far opposite sides of the spectrum they go from crazy fast and brutal to boom, catchy slow chorus.
For someone that likes this band as much as you do, you've been awfully quiet this episode.
No, it's good to hear what you guys think about them. I don't know. The shit I'd say about them is more like personal reflection or like stories. Not really talking about this song. You know, so as it were. I'll probably get into some
It's anecdotal, I guess, yeah. I mean, I was sort of harped on before about, like, you know, previous experiences with them and the history of a band as well. And I think it's important to know a band's history as much as it is to know their present as well. You know, like, in measured doses, obviously, but... Because, you know, like, you need to know a bit, like we talked about the evolution of most bands. So I think it's definitely worth touching on. But, you know, these guys have definitely come from more of a hardcore background. Not so much the metalcore element that we look at a lot. So they've never been, like, brutally, brutally heavy. You know, they've always had that sort of nice, like, in the early days, it was that really sort of, like, scratchy kind of hardcore, like, post-hardcore sound. And then the further along they got, they sort of, that had that smoothed out sort of more rounder sound with a lot more bottom end, I guess. Since their guitarist Dan Brown came on, he came on for Let the Ocean Take Me, I believe it was. And he's the ex-Confession guitarist. If people remember that Long Way Home record, you can definitely tell, like, you know, when you see, a band changes guitarists, you can definitely start seeing a different influence come through. So that's been very apparent for them, for me.
Yeah, and he's like, what's his name again? Sorry,
Dan Brown.
Dan Brown. So Dan's even tampered with some solos, lead guitar solos from time to time, which I don't recall being present in early Amity songs. Is that correct? Yeah. So it's definitely it must have been tough for him, because you want to come in and you know, bring in your own influence, but you want to sort of stay true to the Amity sound as well.
Yeah, it's not a formula, but there's a methodology in what they do, definitely.
But I think it was, you know, if you're not unless you're a really diehard fan, I think it was pretty seamless for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't have noticed, but I think at the same time, you go into a new band and it's their band, you're the new guy, sure, they'll accept you, but you wouldn't be like, oh, it's my band now, you'd try and fit yourself in.
You'd sort of have to have a couple of albums under your belt before you went, all right, like, this is the direction. This is our band. This is my band. This is what I want to do. Sort of that possessive thing, I suppose. These guys have had a bit of a like running joke that they've sort of talked about in interviews as well, where they can't seem to hold on to a guitarist. So they had the guy that did Severed Ties with Troy Brady, who was their long-serving guitarist. He did a couple of records. And then for the Youngbloods, they had the Getaway Plans guitarist, Clint Splattering. And then for Chasing Ghosts, they had a guy called Imran Siddiqui, who did the record and then didn't stick around. He recorded with them and then left. And then Troy Brady ended up leaving. So it's pretty much just been Dan Brown by himself for the last three or four records. But their bass player, Aaron Stringer, plays guitar. He was actually the original guitarist of the band.
He was the only person that's been there the whole time. And Joel came on a few years after him. So those two, lucky it's like they're both the singers, the face of the band. They've been there basically the whole time.
I think you can actually still find the video clip for Severance. I think it's Severance on YouTube. It has Aaron playing guitar and screaming and singing as the front man.
What a legend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talented guy.
Yeah.
And he also has like a rap side project, doesn't he? supposed to be the rap side project.
I've seen that, yeah. It's an interesting one. I think him and a couple of his friends and like JJ from D's Nuts and the other guy, the guitarist from Real Bad, I don't know what his real name is, they have like that, what are they called? Royal Family. And they've just got a couple of songs that are like really big piss takes.
Yeah. So, bit of fun on the side.
Yeah. Rather than being always they actually, two of them, they started a fucking rumor on the internet. Well, they didn't even start a rumor. They made it look like Joel Birch had been arrested, I think it was. And then they put out that white Joel Birch song. And they just, one of them had a shirt that said Free Joel Birch on it. And they never confirmed anything. But then basically people on the internet went, oh my God, he's been arrested. He hasn't posted on Twitter. He hasn't said anything on like Instagram or anything. And I think they'd planned it. He just didn't say anything for like 48 hours. Like, he just didn't get on social media and everyone's like, thought he was arrested and shit. So I think that was what had happened. That's like a 4-star. That's my memory failing me.
Yeah. So. They come from a small little town in southeast Queensland called Gympie.
It's your neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah. So I did a fair bit of growing up near there. And you'd always hear people would say, you know, oh, if someone does something stupid or they look ugly, they must be from Gympie.
that's rough.
Yeah. So that's kind of funny. And I used to go skating with a bloke that knew Joel. and you'd go bodyboarding with him, and you said he was like a really chill, nice guy. So there's a little bit of a personal touch there. Just seemed like a legend from by all accounts. And one day I was up on the coast visiting my family. I went to like a surf shop to buy some shoes. I think this would have been not long after I was introduced to Amity, and I remember going in and seeing some guy with like tattoos and stuff, and I might have been like, I'm just looking for a pair of shoes, whatever. He pointed me in the direction. I bought the shoes and walked out, and I was like, I swear that is the guy from the Amity Affliction. And sure enough, it fucking was. Like, he did some work in there or some shit. I don't know. He was just there. I don't know. It was weird. So, yeah, it's just a small world sometimes, and yeah. They come from a town of there's not many people that live out there, so good on them.
Yeah.
And the band's name, Amity Affliction, I believe it is someone.
It was originally Left Lane Ends.
What was it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is because this is a 4-star. I've seen it on the doco, I swear. They had some friends that died in a car accident on a highway and it was in a Left Lane Ends. So then I believe what it was they picked like juxtapositional words like Amity and Affliction and sort of went the emotions they were sort of feeling from that. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I'll give that a 5-star, mate. That's 4.
I believe that's what it was.
And if we're wrong, they'll just let us know if we're wrong.
We'll get hassled on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the bangs list.
So you guys we've all seen Amity here live several times.
Yes.
You guys can you count them on both hands? How many times you've seen them?
Oh, it's pushing 5 or so, isn't it?
It is 5 for me.
I'd say at least. I think they've done 2 Soundwaves and every record tour they did. So they did like, but they'd always do like, they'd always do a headliner. They did Vans Warped Tour. I don't know why, but I remember when they did Vans Warped Tour, that was 2013, and there was a particular political bill that was big news at the time.
Oh.
And Joel, I won't mention it. Joel Burge goes, oh, you guys in Canberra here, you're cool. And sort of said something about it. And he goes, anyway, this song's called Fruity Alexia. And everyone just lost their fucking mind because they hadn't played a song off that record in a long time. So it sort of worked out really well, but it was just, there's a random little tidbit. So you remember from shows?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I remember we saw them at a small venue.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I think Joel came down to like talk to the crowd. And, he's very charismatic, loud on stage, a lot of presence. And off the stage, he was like, looked tired. He was quite understandably tired. I get that. And I was like, I think we ran over to him. I was like, oh, fucking, hey, mate, sign my shirt. I'm your biggest fan girl. Stuff like that. And he, legend, signed my shirt. I was like, can you get a photo? I think you were there.
I got a photo. It was pretty awkward. No. I was like, hey, man, can I get a photo? And he's like, oh, I guess. And I sort of just like, I was so nervous. I just sort of snapped it and ran away.
Yeah. And you got one for me. And I think two and they're just blurry as fuck. And
there's a photo of you pulling like a scream face just. like that painting the Scream. I was like, oh, it was an iPhone 3, I think I took that on.
God, it's a long time ago.
You see, yeah. So I'd probably say I'd seen them about 10 times.
Yeah.
Because a lot of bands will do, like, when they first started coming out, they were the sort of band, like, they would only do regional tours, because they weren't going to sell out the Metro Theatre or stuff like that. So they'd always come through Canberra, and that was fucking sick. And then as they started getting bigger, they would release a record. And then do like a hometown stadium, or not stadium tour, but a hometown stadium tour in quotation marks. So that's like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide, and like big venues. But then they'd go away and do an internationals loop, like maybe America and or Europe. And then they'd come back and do a regional tour around Australia. So they'd hit Canberra was always one, and places like Wollongong and fucking Newcastle and a whole bunch of places.
That's a lot of fans as well, isn't it? Because you're not going to be making as much money off those smaller shows, but good on them. Good guys.
I would almost disagree. I don't know. I don't know how – I'm not a tour manager or anything, but I would assume, and give me your opinion on this one, if you're driving anywhere between 2 and 4 hours between shows and you're doing a high concentrated number of shows, you're going to blow out your costs for accommodation. But I feel like, you're going to be making a little bit more, like chipping away at it a bit more. You're going to be selling more merch at shows. You're going to be having more tickets sold. So I'm not sure.
No, it's hard to say unless you really sort of know what goes on at that management level, I suppose. But like that would make sense, right?
I remember Aaron doing an interview. I think he said a tour in Australia generally pays for a tour overseas.
Oh, okay.
So they'll make enough money to fund the overseas tour.
That's awesome.
But I mean, that's in the early days when they're not necessarily sponsored internationally. Like a lot of drummers will have, they'll be sponsored, like, Dan Finari from Polaris, for instance, put up something yesterday. They're over in America and he's like, this is my America tour kit. So he doesn't actually take his kit over to America. His sponsor has a kit for him there.
Interesting.
And he uses that for a tour. And then I think sell it back to somewhere or someone else will use it or.
So they're like, we've gone to work to make money so we can go to work somewhere else.
To make money.
Yeah, to make money, make more money.
So, and then, you know, then they get a bit more big, a bit bigger. They get bigger and bigger. And then eventually they're a band that only does those big shows sort of thing. So, which is, just a natural evolution of things, I suppose.
Yeah. They recently signed with a new record label.
Ah, yes.
What's the name of it? It's not coming to me right now. But while you think of it, I'll tell you about it. So the new label is a weird direction because a lot of the bands on this label aren't really heavy metal, core, death metal bands. They're all quite rocky, prog rock and kind of stuff sound.
Pure Noise.
Pure Noise is the label. And I don't know if that's going to like change the direction they're heading or the sound of their music or anything, but you know, time will tell. It's a bit of an interesting change. Or maybe they're going to change where they're based, because I know a lot of them, or at least Aaron, I think, is really into American sport and stuff. So maybe he'd want to live in America, you know, record with that label and base it out of there.
Bit
of,
yeah.
Yeah. So time will tell, I guess.
Yeah. I read somewhere recently that they had a problem with, I think, with Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And then Roadrunner was fucking them around or something. So they had a big problem. So they were just glad to be off Roadrunner after that. But I couldn't find anything about it to sort of support that. But yeah, I mean, you know, try new things. Yeah, I think if you're with the smaller record labels, they've got a bit more freedom because it just makes sense that like the bigger labels are going to want to try and influence bands as much as they can to make money, because you don't get to be the biggest fish in the pond by letting people record stuff that is sort of more niche, I guess. So what are you looking up over there?
Nothing. Just doing unprofessional things. Get off your phone on the podcast. Yeah. So what are some bands that listening to Amity would push you into? Like if you, similar bands, I guess. If you like Amity, you may like what? It's a hard question, isn't it? In reality, they're just another metalcore band kind of, and the bands like them, you can't think of anything off the top of your head, can you?
In the early days, I'd say From Autumn to Ashes.
Okay.
We've already mentioned them not that long ago.
You're not allowed to say Killswitch Engage.
No.
Or Adam D.
Yeah. Polaris, obviously, I think is a big one. I think because you've got the, and not just with their sound, but their setup too. So you got a bass player that does cleans predominantly in choruses. And then you've got a lead vocalist who does the uncleans.
Yep.
And, still a similar sound as well. Like, you can tell they're different bands, but,
yep.
And they've got that same kind of contrasting feel where you've got the uncleans.
Yeah, as I said, usually the frenetic and then smooth. Yeah.
I think it's also to do with how high Aaron can sing. So maybe you're looking at bands like, nah, not I See Stars. Maybe Miss May I. Maybe. Yeah. Memphis May Fire.
Sleeping with Sirens.
Old Sleeping with Sirens sound when they were heavy, clean.
A bit scratchier, yeah.
Yeah. I like their sound in that regard, that they are very similar to a lot of bands, but they are still identifiable because of how different they sound. Mm. And also, so songs worth listening by these guys. I know they've got a quite large catalogue now. You know, you said there's 5 or 6 albums or so.
Yeah.
If you could narrow it down to one song, you're going to say to someone, check this song out. It's a great band. What song would it be?
Ooh.
You're going first.
Yeah, you're up first this time, man.
I'll go with R.I.P. Foghorn off Young Bucks. All right. That's just a song about the general, you know, the subject matter we were talking about before. It's pretty good. Shows how melodically skilled they were and how good Aaron could sing. It's an older sounding Amity. Great song, and I'd probably share that with someone that was new to the band. Yeah.
What about you, Daniel?
I'm going to say from Chasing Ghosts, may even be the closing track, correct me if I'm wrong, Bondi Street Blues.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
I've always loved that song. And
is that the song that he wrote for his mate who came to visit him when he was in hospital, maybe?
Yeah, when the lead singer of Amity attempted to take his own life a few years. I think it was before Youngbloods, and that's part of what the subject matter of that is on. The lead singer of Break Even, who are a really good band, and they're not together anymore, I don't think. Anyway, they're from Perth, so this is going off the interview that I read that Joel did with a magazine online. So he emailed or wrote to him, and he wrote this song for him, and he sent it through to him. The guy from Break Even sent it through to Joel while he was in the hospital or while he was in recovery, and just sort of said, you know, hey, like, you know, you're going to be okay. You can get through this. So that's the chorus of Bondi Street Blues. The Boat Sails On is actually a direct, like, I won't say it's not a homage. It's almost a direct quote from a Break Even song that has The Boat Sails On in it. So it's a direct reference to that. So it's sort of like a call out without being a name check. Okay. To say, you know, hey, you got me through some shit. I'm going to try and help everybody else get through some shit with this. I'm going to share this experience in like kind of not a shrouded, but a generalized way. So, you know, when someone tells a story that's generalized or a song that's generalized, more people can relate to it. So I think that's sort of what that's about.
Instead of making it too personal. Go.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Look, that was
was your song. Do you have a song or cover it up by talking shit?
was that anything else you want to add to that?
No, it's just that was the first one that came to mind, really, when we're thinking of other songs. That's just the go-to for me. Close second would be Death's Hand.
Oh. Very heavy, very heavy. Oh,
so you guys are taking it too soft. I was trying,
But that's, you know, I said close second for me. But Bondi Street Blues, I think I really love the melodies in that song, and not just not just vocally, but was Dan on that album? Was he on Chasing Ghosts at that?
No, he's not.
Okay, but from the intro, you know, they kind of a lot of very nice sounding delay used in there. And it's just a bit of a different kind of at the time, anyway, it was a very different take on Amity, I feel, and it worked really well.
Because it's a heavy topic, but it's done with a bit more lightheartedness, I guess.
Yeah. Come on, mate, the fans want an old song. Come on, they don't know what to listen to.
Easy pick. It's called Jesse Intense.
it's very, very old.
Very old song, yeah. Well, I've bands like this that I've known sort of a bit longer, I've always got to pick the old one, like with Parkway. Except you pick one that was older than me. So, this was actually the first track I heard by them. So I'd not long known I Killed the Prom Queen and like the whole thing with like Michael Crafter being in and out of the band, rah, rah. I was sort of scratching around and I didn't really pay much attention to hardcore or this kind of stuff. It was just like really brutal, killing with a smile or nothing. So I was like, oh, he was a guest vocalist on some band called The Amity Affliction. I was like, oh, who the fuck are they? So I hunted the track down on YouTube because it was 10 years ago and, like, people still put music on YouTube, but not anywhere to the degree they do now. And I had to listen to it, and I was like, that's actually not fucking bad. So then I just kept listening to it, and then got the record.
And is that how you got into Amity?
That's how I got into Amity. Someone that wasn't even in the band got me into Amity.
So. I'll tell you how. Years and years ago, someone said to me, check out this band called Escape the Fate. And I was like, these guys are awful. And had this one song. had this one song that started with, like, crazy sweet picking. Like, that was actually amazing. And somehow from there, I found Falling in Reverse, which was Ronnie Radke's new album, and got into them through that, which is like, it's like a weird kind of path you find to new bands sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like your own little journey, personal journey, as I always say. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Do you want to... Well,
I was just going to say one little story about...
Yeah, you know, like, fuck yeah, I love stories. Tell me a story.
Oh, you know this one. You were there.
Fuck yeah. Dan, you got a story next, buddy.
No, it's just... Because, like, I love that fucking song, and I never got to... I never really saw them live till a little while after Youngbloods was released, so they'd sort of phased that song out of their live stuff. So for the Soundwave 2013, Confession, which is Michael Crafter's band, and Amity were both on the bill, and I was just like, oh, fuck. So I got on Twitter, I made a Twitter account. I had Twitter because I followed AJ Matter, because that dude's fucking Twitter account was just an opera, hey? Like, a soap opera.
Because it was just drama.
Just him paying people out and calling everyone a cunt and then hassling the venues and then, like, you know, talking to the police and stuff.
And then destroying sound waves single-handedly.
Anyway, so I was like, oh, fuck. So I tweeted Joel Birch. And I said, oh, hey, like, Crafter's going to be at Soundwave. Any chance you guys will play Jesse Intense? And this was the coolest thing and the worst thing ever because he responded instantly, which is really cool of him. But he goes, sorry, mate, I hate that song and I refuse to play it. And I was just like, fuck.
I just got burned by Joel Birch. I don't know what to feel
like. Dude, I got wrecked. I was like, fuck, there's no coming back. Like, he wasn't being a dick about it, obviously. And it wasn't until later on, after I'd been in a band for about 3 years or nearly 3 years, that I went, I fucking hate some of the songs that we've written. I don't want to play these fucking songs ever again. Fuck these songs. You know, because you've done it as well. You've been your band. There's be songs that people like, you know.
Oh, mate.
Play this. And even I would fucking flog the dead horse with the band I was in. I was like, let's play this song. And they're like, no. I'm like, fair enough.
You should call your band the Dead Horse because you play fucking so many covers.
And we don't play the horses. Thank fuck for that.
No, God.
That's the one that everyone always wants us to fucking play.
Yeah, I can't imagine being a cover band.
Very meta at the moment, isn't it?
So, yeah, they didn't play it, unfortunately. But
such is life.
That's, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, you can.
No, but look, you got a response from Joel Birch. That's pretty fucking.
That cool. was it. Was well, yeah, it was cool because, you know, I was a bit younger, and you know, I think it's really important to be careful when you meet your idols. You know, I think because I've heard stories of people meeting people in their favorite bands and they were like the nicest people ever. I've had the privilege of talking to a couple of these guys once or twice and they were just super nice. And I've met, you know, a lot of other Aussie bands and they're all super nice. And then some of your friends go, yeah, I met my favorite lead singer and it turns out he's a cunt. Told me to fuck off and stuff. So, yeah. You know, someone might, they might be having a bad day. You never know.
They're people at the end of the day, man.
Exactly right. But, you know, it's just one of those things like,
you know what you're going to say? You get nervous, right?
I think it's more more nerve-wracking being a fan because you're like, you want to go up and be like, oh, hey, exactly. Like, you know, you've changed my life. Like, I'm fucking arguably still alive because of you. Or, you know, I'm in a really good place mentally because of you. But you don't want to be like just smothering them.
Yeah.
So you end up just having this, hey, thanks, bro, see ya, and then just walk
exactly.
off.
Exactly. So you know what I mean? I've had a couple of awkward interactions when I was much younger and then it got to the point where I thought, you know what, if I'm going to talk to someone that, you know, I adore or idolize in a band, I'm just going to tell them, like, thank you for everything you've done. I really appreciate it. You're amazing. And just like that.
Yeah.
I met Herman Lee from Dragon Force once. And I was like, I was shaking for some reason. I don't know, getting nervous or everything. This is weird. I was like, hey, mate. Oh, fuck. Oh, how you going? But anyway, I was like, look, thanks for everything you do. Basically, like, I play guitar because of you. Can I please get a photo with you? And at that time, you weren't allowed to take photos with the band. And he's like, yeah, come jump behind the table real quick and get a photo. And sure enough, let me get a photo with him. So there you go. All right. Well, any interactions for you, mate?
I'm trying to think back as to how I actually got into them. I think it all just, it's all a big blur. I think it happened very gradually. A lot of friends were into Amity. It took me a while to get into that metalcore kind of scene. And I was more into like, as you know, I'm a massive Avenged Sevenfold fan. I was like
that big rock direction, rock kind of stuff. Yeah.
More like that, even like sort of stadium kind of.
Stadium metal.
Stadium metal bands. With really big sounds, like awesome guitar solo.
Flashy kind of feel to them.
Yeah.
And like guys that are a bit before the metalcore scene, you could tell that they listen to like thrash and hair metal and stuff growing
your
up.
Metallica's, right. Your Trivium kind of stuff.
That's right. And even like I said last week when we were talking about when we were talking about Parkway, I think it was, and I mentioned that it took me a while to be able to listen to
Unclean Vocals. Yeah, takes a minute.
It took a while, and you know, I had to acquire the taste for metalcore, I guess. And Amity were one of those bands that were kind of gradually, should I say, forced upon me because I was just surrounded by them. Like you know, the people.
I'll just play heaps of them when you live together.
At that point, I was into them a lot, but when Joel and I would jam together and try and do shitty covers together and, sometimes succeeded, I don't know, but, Amity was brought up a lot and played a lot. Any car trips we'd do together, we'd go to Soundwave, whatever, we'd have road trips to Sydney, Amity would get played. Another one of my good mates would play Amity, and I just sort of got to the point where they just grew on me. I just started listening to them, and I think, it was around the time Chasing Ghosts came out.
Oh, good record.
And that was probably the first album I sort of listened to in full by them. But I wasn't really into them until Let the Ocean Take Me came out. And I was like in love with Death's Hand and the majority of that album I thought was banging, was really, really good. And, but then, you know, sort of looking back, as you know, sometimes you get into bands a bit later on and you go back and check out their earlier material in their back catalogue. And now for me, Chasing Ghosts is like probably the number one album for me. I love Youngbloods too, but I haven't given it the time because I got into them a bit later. I haven't given it that time. Oh,
well, we'll talk to you about that after this. But we want to know.
I guess
about
I'm getting more.
more of a jam down your throat.
any stories? Is that what you.
I want to hear if you had any awkward interactions with people you idolise, actually.
Okay. All right. So no one laugh at me here, but Evanescence are one of my all-time favorite bands. I knew that. That's the kind of thing
we said last week. It was like there was a sequence of things that you get into to get you into metalcore.
Yeah.
It was reaction videos, then Evanescence, then Miley Cyrus or Katy Perry, then Nickelback. So you've got two on that list now.
But it was Evanescence played in Canberra I think it was 2012, and I was into Evanescence when I was like, when they were big, like when they first came out, when I was like 11, 12 years old. None of us knew
what being edgy was. Yeah. I'll give you that.
And it was sort of like, in a way, it was like nostalgia, but then it's sort of like 8 years later, she's releasing Evanescence is releasing another album. Like, that's cool. So I could have sort of had a second coming wind. With them. Yeah. A second wind with them. And I've always, like, I think Amy Lee's got one of the most captivating voices in the world. And like I said, at my roots, that's the kind of, like, that's the sort of stadium rock and metal that I've always been into, like the anthems and like it's.
So you asked her for a drink and she turned you down?
No.
He's getting there. They played
at the convention center, and I heard a rumor that if you go around to the side of the convention center after the gig, most bands will come out and say g'day.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they came out, which was great.
You ran there with bells on.
And we were all lining up. They weren't allowed to do photos, which sucked. The security guy was like, no photos. I was like, damn it. But I get, they're on a schedule and, you know, needed to get to Melbourne the next day, whatever. But the fact that they still came out to interact was really cool. Anyway, I'm lining up to meet Amy Lee, and she gets to the guy in front of me, and the guy just very awkwardly lifts up his shirt and says, can you sign here? And points to his chest, points to his man boobs. And then for some reason, when it got to me, I said, oh, hey, Amy, how you going? Great show. Here, you can just sign my ticket. You don't want to see my chest. So,
smooth as gravel.
And look, it was awkward as hell, but she laughed. So
yeah. A 10-ton weight just falls off your shoulders when she laughs. You're like, thank God.
And look, I made Amy Lee laugh, so I'm happy. Mission accomplished. That was great. But and nothing related in relation to Amity, unfortunately. I've never met them or come across them or done any meet and greets with them. I caught Aaron's pick at a concert. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, I didn't catch it. It fell on the floor and landed on my feet, and I picked it up.
So. I've actually got an Amity pick as well. But
you do?
I can't remember if someone caught it.
No, I think, yeah, Rob caught it for you.
Yeah, mate, caught it straight out of the air or something. Mate. Yeah.
I caught a Parkway pick. That's nice. Oh, and I caught a drumstick from Suicide Silence as well.
Oh, that's Alex Lopez. That's a big one.
At No Sleep Till Sydney, yeah. He just fucking yoinked it into the crowd. I was going to use a different word there. He just chucked it in the crowd, and it had a split in it because he just blast beats all day. And I was like, I got super excited. Went and checked it into the coat room. Like, you want to just check this? And I'm like, well, wrap it in a shirt first.
I caught a Trivium pick years ago as well. I remember Matt Heavey did 2-finger throw, and this fucking pick, like, it got hang time, and I jumped up and put my hand up. Like, my eyes were closed, I think, as well. And this fucking pick lands in my hand. I've got it in my drawers just here.
Slaps right in the middle, just steps in there.
Thank you for the good experiences, bands. Anyway, look, we've dribbled shit for long enough. Let's talk about the MVP of the song we're meant to be talking about.
Joel, you're up.
All My Friends Are Dead. Look, for me, it's going to be Joel Birch himself. The lyrics in this song, the delivery, extremely powerful, strong. I'm not going to say angry, because I don't know if this actually is angry or not. It's just very passionate delivery. I love it.
It's desperation.
Yeah.
With a bit of, like, aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But not angry. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, thanks, Joel. Another banger.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to say, what's the drummer's name again?
Joe Longabardi.
Sorry if we mispronounced that.
Yeah, sorry if I fucked that
one up. We'll get that right one day. Because I think that's the biggest contrast compared to what they've done most recently. And it's, if it is a sort of a sign as to what's to come, it's exciting. And I think it's
fucking
driven.
Hope so,
it's driven. Like the, it starts with blast beats, and they've never done that before. And that's the hook. That's the number one hook in the song for me. It's that blast beat that gets you going straight away. And you imagine like seeing this live would be awesome. Hey? Like just
the lights making you have a seizure.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And then, you know, Joel coming in with All My Friends Are Dead, and then the blast beat is kicking in.
Yeah.
And like I said, the stuff that he can do with his feet that in this song is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, going from a standard like driving double kick to like
that really fast stuff.
To really fast doubling up on it.
Because that shit's difficult as a drummer. That shit's difficult to wrap your head around.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's crazy. And, you know, it's not the same all the way through either. Like he uses it tastefully, which is really good. Like he's not just thrashing about the whole time. Like he'll use the blast beat, but that's for like the first 6 to 8 bars or whatever of the song. And then again in the next verse, but doesn't overdo it. And then the epic breakdown, like at the end, that's pretty good. So MVP is the drummer who I'm not going to try and say his name again because I'll just embarrass myself.
Yeah, I always say to people, like, come to Amity Affliction for, you know, Aaron's vocals, but then stay for Joel's vocals, and you're saying now you can stay for Joe's drums, right?
That's right.
Well, yeah, I'm going to agree with Joel here and say Joel Birch's vocals. Oh, he's just the MVP. Like I said, I wasn't massive on the stuff they did on Misery. That doesn't mean it was bad. Again, it was just personal preference. I still rated that record. Still bought the vinyl, keeping up with that, you know, a little vinyl hound, the like Edgelord sort of thing. It's really good to see him doing his filthy uncleans again. You know, the big screams, he double tracks a couple of them, the really deep growls. It's just good to see him doing that because I think that's, I'm not sure because it might be Aaron Stringer as well because he's done unclean vocals for Confession on the Holy War track. Well, and they sound kind of similar. But anyway, they're making use of those really big uncleans and I just froth for that. So, you know, it's good to see him utilizing because his tonal stuff was good. His cleans are good. It's just good to see him going back to that older stuff that, you know, people like Joel and I are more fans of and akin to. So, yeah, definitely him. Right.
Bangs, the best part. How many bangs? I'll go first because I'm going to start it quite high. This song goes off like a frog in a sock, doesn't it? I give it an 8 out of 10. Bang it. Love it.
I'm going to jump in quickly and say 8.5 out of 10.
I'm going to say 8 as well.
Oh, well, we all feel the same about this one.
All on the same page.
Not polarizing at all. Just this song.
Welcome to the Bangs List where we all just agree with each other.
we haven't really said this before, I think, but like this is you need this song in your life. Listen to it once, check it out, and maybe you'll go down the rabbit hole from there.
Yeah.
It's great.
Happy to admit as well that with this, like we're all, it's all familiar subject matter for us, so we do get a bit more excited talking about a band we all really know. So it does contrast with the stuff that you guys have shown me that I didn't know and I've shown you that you didn't know but wasn't mainstream. So, you know, again, it's all sort of your own opinion. It's just we're all very much sort of into this one.
Yeah, this was like the Bangers List before the Bangers List being successful. You know, we've shared something, everyone has enjoyed it, and then we've. So next week or the week after, maybe we'll finally talk about a small band and a unknown song.
Well, I think we'll next week, are we on for Killswitch Engage?
We're calling it out. Yeah, we are trying to add, we're trying to have, current stuff as well because this song came out about a month ago and Killswitch just put that other one out. So I think we're on for that one and then the sky's the limit from there. Hopefully someone else puts out something sick. It is kind of shit too because I just wanted to say this really quickly. I'm having a terrible run with live gigs. I went to see Polaris with Architects last month Polaris pulled out right at the last minute, which shattered me. Their lead singer is a sick cunt. He still signed the vinyl for me. I brought my vinyl all the way from Sydney, from Canberra, up to Sydney, and he was a mad cunt about it. He had a mad chat with me and sort of apologized, and we were like, fuck, dude, you know, not your fault, this and that. And then yesterday, fucking Metallica just shit-canned their national tour.
Yeah.
Slipknot. Yeah.
Do we know for sure? Do you think Slipknot might...
Tickets will be refunded by the end of the week. But this is all very dated information.
Slipknot, because they probably want to get over here anyway, I'd imagine, to promote...
I'd say yes, but not that they don't like Australia, but I'd say that Australia is not high on their list of... it's not that it's high on the list. It's not in the immediate future for their touring schedule.
And I guess if you're going with Metallica, you're going to be playing in... awesome stadiums where they can put on their best live shows.
I don't think Slipknot will come over for that tour. They've said on Facebook and social media and stuff that we are going to get back to you guys as soon as we can with some information about what's coming up. But I think when you get to bands that big, you know what your touring forecast is for the next year at least.
Yeah, real shame for anybody that's listening to this podcast like a year or so in the future, like that shit's already happened.
Yeah. That was just me having shit luck with touring, so I don't want to buy tickets for anything just yet because it might be shit and that band might cancel last minute.
So talk to us on Twitter at the Bangers List. Tell us some songs you love or that we should add to the list because, you know, eventually we're going to run out of songs. And we will catch you all next week.
Quick shout out to Mike Champa for retweeting us for all those sleeping about last week's episode. Thanks, buddy. Mike. Hopefully he gets back to us and doesn't hassle us too much. Catch us later.
See you.
See ya.
All my friends are fucking dead.